This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow unless there's a major problem. Because tomorrow is Good Friday, and my major client has the entire building shut down on Good Friday. So they aren't even going to be in the building. Which means that there will be no reason for me to go into the building unless something goes wrong tonight, which happens to be month end tonight, and which also happens to be end of fiscal year, because my major client actually runs their fiscal year from April to March. I don't know how or why they started that, but they started that at some point, and so they're actually finishing up tonight, with fiscal year. So it should be fine. I mean, we've been doing this for months and months and months and months and months. We did have a little hiccup last night. We cross-check balances through 5 different points, quality assurance points. And if they work, fairly hard at ignoring some of the safety that are involved, they can cause those data checks to fail, which that's why they're there. And sure enough, there was some effort applied to throwing a batch out of balance, and so it balanced on 4 of the 5 checks, but that first check it went boom. But we just drill in, use the drill-in reports, and it tells you exactly what batch it is. And so my buddy who works on that system now, he just got in, looked at it, immediately wrote the head of the department over there, "Tell me everything you know about what happened to this batch." Sure enough, there were some user interventions and trying to do the right thing, and just turned out in this case it was not the right thing. So that's okay. It turned out to be what I thought it would probably be, so there wasn't really anything for me to do to fix. It was just fine. So that's all going fine. There are cars trying to make left-hand turns here, and hey, it's time for me to make a left-hand turn now. And having a little trouble in the intersection there. That went well. It's been a good week. Had some good conversations with friends this week. Chatted, heard back from a couple of beta readers this week that were very complimentary on Windfall Broadcast. So that's good. So I will have at least 2 more beta readers for the next book. People are responding a little slower than they did to the last one, but this one is also 100 pages longer, so that, might be a little discouraging to people when they see it. They go, oh, man. And it takes people a little longer than to compile their mistake list and all that kind of stuff. So I did send out a little reminder this last weekend. Said, hey, there's only 6 weeks left. Just a gentle reminder. I'll do that again in 2 weeks, and then another 2 weeks, and then another 2 weeks, and then hey, it's time. So we'll see. But I was gratified because one of my beta readers that responded said he was really enjoying the universe, the setting, that it was a very intriguing setting for him. And then a buddy I had breakfast with today was saying that there were places in the book that really made him think, about, Christianity and about his Christian experience. And that's really what it's all about for me. It's about saying, hey, here's some ideas. Think about this, and hopefully I'll entertain you a little bit, while you're underway. And maybe make you tear up a little bit in spots. It seems to be mission accomplished on that, at least for him. So we'll see how the other beta readers like it as it's coming in. Then come May 15th, I'll swing off the book I'm on now and swing over to that one and start working to get it out. And so then I hope to have the production version out by, I think, June 15th. And then I'll pick the book I'm working on now back up, and then hope to have it to beta by about October 15th. Although I think that I have a plot line created on the current book that should take me, land me somewhere just over 100,000 words. I'd really like to land these books somewhere between 325 and 350 pages, as opposed to 450 pages, which is what the current book is. And I think we're going to be fine. I think there's enough here. I'm actually up around, well, I'm about at 30,000 words. I've almost reached 30,000 words. In fact, I plan to be at 30,000 words before the weekend. And if I can get to 30,000 words in this, that's pretty good. That is pretty good. Because I've only been working on it for about 4 weeks. At that pace, you know, I could theoretically have the book roughed in 4 months, which would be fabulous, because then it would take another month to edit and get the cover together, and then I could actually get it to beta around September 15th, kind of pull back the schedule a little bit, but we'll see, it'll all work out. Still don't know exactly what I'm going to do for the epilogue, for the tearjerker ending on this one. I have an idea, and I think it'll work. Have a nugget of an idea that seems to resonate, so I have to keep expanding it. Let's just keep mulling it and see what we can do there. So, as I've said in the past, this one is based on the parable of the narrow door, which I've mentioned in the past. Basically, the parable starts before Jesus starts the parable. Some people come up to him and say, "Will only a few be saved?" And Jesus looks at them, understanding what their question really is. Is it just going to be us and everybody else is going to burn in hell? And Jesus has a very interesting answer to them. And it's really an answer that is an affront to them, because at that time, there was a feeling in among the Jewish nation that they were the chosen people. They were the only people that were going to make it into the kingdom, and everybody else was, going to perish because they were the chosen ones. And so it was not considered an insult to call Gentiles dogs. It was just a statement of fact. And so when Jesus said to the woman who came begging to him, when she pretended to be a Jew and called him Son of David, to come, heal her son, I think it was, and Jesus turned to her and he said, "It's not really fit for us to take the children's bread and give it to the dogs." That was very much within the cultural mindset, that the Jews were just better than everybody else. And that seems like a harsh thing for Jesus to say at the time, but I'm convinced that what Jesus was trying to do is say, look, don't come to me pretending that you're something you're not. And so then she backed up immediately and she said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs get the crumbs from the table." And he said, "Okay, there you go. And because of your faith, it's done." So, in that mindset of people coming to Jesus then, and the Jewish mindset as it is, it's fascinating to read this parable, because they basically come and say, "So only a few are going to be saved, right, right, right. It's just us, right?" And Jesus says, strive to enter the narrow door. Because he said, there's going to come a time when you'll want to enter and you won't be able to because the homeowner is going to get up and shut the door and you're going to bang on the door. And he's going to say, get away from me. I don't know where you come from. Which is an interesting phrase. I got to do more research on that phrase because that Jesus repeats it. I don't know where you come from. And they say, well, look, we ate with you, we drank with you, you know us. And he said, I'm telling you the truth. I don't know where you come from. Get away from me, you workers of iniquity. It's a very harsh parable. You workers of iniquity. And then he tells them, you're going to see Abraham and Isaac, at the feast, and you're going to weep, you're going to wail, because you're going to see people come from north and south and east and west, and you're not going to get in. This idea of striving to enter the narrow door, that don't be really comfortable, don't be really justified in all your actions, because that may bring you to a place where you're going to be very surprised at what the consequences are. So with that kind of a backdrop, that's kind of what the book is about. We are at a very interesting hinge point in history, and I've said this before, that the next 20 years really are going to be more profound in terms of societal changes. They're really going to be more profound than anything we've experienced in the last thousands and thousands of years of human experience. This is an amazing time to be alive from a technology standpoint. In addition to a change of attitudes about various things. And one of the things that there's really coming this huge shift on is homosexuality, gender identity, gay and lesbian issues, all this sexual preferences. And as it turns out, back in October, the city of Springfield, which I call Springfield home, even though I live 8 miles north of Springfield because we're in the Springfield School District, one of the things that happened was the Springfield City Council passed an ordinance that changed the definition of who were protected classes. And they added not only sexual orientation, but gender identity. And said that you can't discriminate against somebody, and businesses couldn't discriminate based on this, based on that, based on that, based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And they listed the things in the business that businesses would be responsible that they couldn't discriminate against. And one of them is public accommodations. So, I think they were kind of trying to be bold and trying to be inclusive and all that kind of stuff, but I think they really kind of got ahead of where this is going to be interesting to see how this worked out. I think they got ahead of where Springfieldians actually are. And so that caused an uproar. And within the city council's ordinances that when they pass something, if they get enough votes, then it can be brought up for a vote and it can be repealed. It's a little weird because you have to vote yes to repeal, no to keep it. So it's a little backwards, but that's been explained over and over again. So, it's so interesting to me because many, many, many of the religious organizations in town have really made a commitment to die on this hill. And so I've been just watching this, trying to decide how do I vote on this, even if I can vote. I'm not even sure I can vote because they keep saying it's for Springfield residents. And I certainly don't live within the city limits, but I am a member of the Springfield School District. So we're trying to figure out, okay, what does that mean? Are we actually supposed to go vote? But in the process of that, I've been doing a lot of reading. I've been doing a lot of reading on Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act. You know, why is everybody so up in arms? Why is everybody so up in arms about Arkansas's when, in fact, 24 other states already have them? And the act that it is all modeled on was actually passed by Bill Clinton and the Democrats, albeit it was used in a surprising way by the Supreme Court when the Supreme Court used it to rule in Hobby Lobby's favor when Hobby Lobby said, we don't want to pay for abortions. So there's all this stuff tangled up in it, and it's really fascinating. Of course, both the proponents and the opponents of the repeal paint all kinds of horror stories about what's going to happen. And that's to be expected because they're trying to persuade people to their viewpoint. Honestly, most of what they claim is going to happen, I don't really think is going to happen. And as I was talking to a buddy about this week, for me, this really, there's two sides of this for me. If you're just going to talk to me as the business consultant, as the practical business person, that side of me says, oh, okay, I'm not really in favor of government regulation just for the sake of government regulation. Because the more government regulation you have, the more the provocateurs are just going to exploit it. I'm all for government regulation if, in fact, there is a problem that desperately needs to be addressed. Then let's do it. Let's get the regulation in. And as I was talking to a buddy this morning, you know, there is freedom of religion in this country, and there is freedom for the pursuit of happiness. And my buddy was, you know, very clear that one of the core values he has is freedom of the pursuit of happiness, and that we have free will and we should be able to pursue our own course in life. All that stuff is a given. People should be able to have their own religious freedom. They should be able to enjoy a pursuit of happiness that is not dictated by others, that they should be able to do what they want as long as they're not harming others. So mixing all that into the mix, then where it really becomes the crux of it, where the crux of it obviously really comes in is in the public space. Because as near as I can tell, all of these things that are being talked about, being passed or repealed or whatever, when it comes to nonprofit organizations, especially nonprofit religious organizations, I'm getting my mail one moment, that there's no question that nonprofit religious organizations should be exempt from all this. So you can't really, you know, if someone who's living a homosexual lifestyle, let's put it that way, goes in, doesn't tell a church, and he goes in and he starts working in the children's ministry or something, and then, you know, 2 weeks later he comes in and he says, well, you know, I'm gay, and they fire him, there's not really any recourse there. Because it's a religious organization, it is built on the religious principles, and since it's a non-profit, they get to make their own rules. Where all of this really comes into play, really has to do, I'm backing into my garage, it really has to do with for-profit businesses and in the commercial space. Because, you know, you don't really want to have businesses that are picking and choosing among their customers and refusing to serve people. This potentially is a problem. You want people to have equal opportunities. No matter what choices they're making, provided their choices are not actively harming others. So my understanding is the reason that the Indiana law caused such a stink, the Indiana Act as well as the Arizona one, the reason that they both caused such a stink and are still causing such a stink is that in those there is language that actually protects people who are in for-profit businesses being able to say, well, it's my religious beliefs that homosexuality is wrong, therefore I'm not going to photograph your wedding because I believe this is wrong. Now, you know, people could use a variety. Oh, I'm sorry, that's a weekend. I was planning on taking off with my kid family, you know. But if someone specifically says, well, you're a homosexual and I don't believe homosexual marriage is right, and so I'm not going to do your wedding, that under these new regulations, a person could go and file a complaint and there could be, you know, a $1,000 fine or something more significant, depending on the harm that's claimed. I just see this as something that's going to make lawyers a lot of money. That's really honestly what I see. But getting back to trying to define what the problem is as a business person, I look at this and I say, okay, is there a problem? And the response I've gotten from some of individuals that I've talked to, they said, well, yeah, I'm sure people get discriminated against because they're homosexuals. But my response is, well, oh, okay. But are we just going to take somebody's word for it? You know, because there's some people who'll say, oh, yeah, well, my boss just didn't like me because I'm smarter than he is. And he just treats me like that because, well, okay, that may be true, but it might also be true that your boss just doesn't like you because you're obnoxious. So, you know, if all we're doing is taking the subjective opinion of someone that I've been discriminated against when there's been no direct verbal, yes, you are not going to move in here because you're homosexuals and I hate homosexuals, which, you know, anybody with two neurons to put together, if they were really trying to discriminate against homosexuals, that would be a really stupid thing to say. But nonetheless, I do not doubt that there have been at least some people who have been told that point blank. I don't doubt that. The question in my mind is this really a huge, big enough problem that we need to legislate it? And the only way I have to judge that one way or another is to say, well, how have we judged this in the past? And how are we currently judging it? And the fact is, I can go to tons of statistics showing that African Americans are economically disadvantaged in this country, that the unemployment rate is higher, that they do not make as much money as their Caucasian and Asian counterparts. I can go to tons of statistics and show how women, are economically disadvantaged. There's all kinds of stats to show that in this country there is a problem with gender, pure gender, you know, just male-female gender causing an economic disadvantage. There is a problem with race causing an individual. And so I really think that that's a problem that we have to legislate because there is obviously a problem. We've got the statistics to show that. From what little statistics I have seen on this issue, and no one seems to be bringing up any statistics, which causes me, you know, to question, there it really is not much of a statistical difference. And if anything, a lot of homosexuals are doing really quite well. You got a lot of creative people in there. You got a lot of sensitive, thinking, intelligent people in that group, and they're doing quite well. And anecdotally, I have not seen in my experience that much discrimination, which that's just my anecdotes, obviously. But I'd really like to see the statistics to say that yes, this is really a problem and we need to do something about it. So if those statistics don't exist, then for me, it's a lot harder to make the case that we need this new law because I'm not necessarily the type of person that is in favor of just making more laws because, you know, someone is feeling disadvantaged. Because we can extend that out to all kinds of things. And especially now that they've bridged into gender identity, I was reading one article about the fact, and this was just trying to say, okay, we've talked to lawyers, we think this is what the impact's going to be. Right now, because public accommodations in this law are also included, we have to talk about restrooms now. So they were saying that in the city of Springfield right now, it is not illegal for a man to go into a woman's restroom. He can do that if he wants to. Now, the upshot of that will probably be the woman will come if any women are in there, they'll come out, they'll talk to the manager and say, there's a guy in our bathroom. The manager will go in and he'll kick them out of his restaurant. If the ordinance stays in place, if the guy puts on some eyeshadow or paints his fingernails or puts on a dress and just goes into the women's bathroom just to be a provocateur, women can still come out and tell the manager, well, he puts, you know, but if the manager goes and kicks that guy out, then that guy can go and actually file a suit against the manager of the store, of the restaurant, because he was discriminated against. His gender identity was not respected. And this seems to me to be kind of a far piece and unnecessary legislation. So that's like the business side of me. I just look at it and say, you know, I'm not really sure what the need is for this. And I can see that this is just going to lead to just all kinds of lawsuits when maybe there isn't really a need for this in the first place, in a practical sense. So that's the business side of me. Now, the problem is there's another side of me that's far more important to me. And that is the me who is trying to live a life as part of the true kingdom of God. And this is where I face the narrow door. This narrow door of behavior as a member of the kingdom then becomes the big question. And I was talking with a friend this morning, you know, and I asked my friend this morning, I said, you know, now the question is, would Jesus even vote on this? And my friend kind of shook his head. He said, no, probably not. I said, no, I don't think he would either. I don't think this would even register on his radar. Because he'd have more important things to do, like building relationships with people. Okay, and then if Jesus did vote, how would he vote? And when you factor in the Sermon on the Mount, which is if someone wants your coat, give it to them. If someone wants your cloak, you know, if someone wants you to go a mile, just go 2 miles with them. And then at that point, my friend piped up and he said, well, right. And he said, frankly, if Jesus had a cake shop and a homosexual couple came in and said, we'd like to get married, would you make our cake? Jesus would say, yeah, absolutely, I'll make your cake. It said, my friend's opinion was that Jesus would not only make the cake, he would not only put the two grooms on top of the cake, he would also go to the wedding, he would go to the party with them, he would turn the water into the wine, and they would have a great party. I mean, you know, and I don't think he's wrong. I don't think he's wrong. So, you know. I think it's an easy excuse for us to say, well, Jesus doesn't care one way or another what you do here. But then, of course, I'm faced with the narrow door. So, A, I got to find out if I can even vote on this thing. And then, B, I got to decide if I'm even going to vote. And then, C, I've got to decide how I'm going to vote. And at this point, knowing that I am faced with the narrow door, I don't know if I go to vote, if there's really much choice how I should vote. So it's very interesting. It's very, very interesting. And I think this is just going to be the first of many, many, many of these like decisions that will have to be made in this next 20 years. And that's fascinating to me. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.